This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. I am Dave Richmond, along with ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, sir?
What's going on, guys? I don't know what was going on there for a minute. Saw a heard a little purple haze, Jimi Hendrix. I thought it was time for Pirate football. How y'all doing?
Doing great and very excited because Pirate Nation, we know that coming up on Wednesday is the beginning of fall camp for the Pirates in Greenville. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, man?
Doing well, guys. And in addition to the guys reporting, media days being done differently this year, like some conferences doing it virtually. So Mike Houston and then a couple players, I'm trying to recall who, I'm sure one of them's Holton, will be meeting with the media virtually on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Jaquan McMillan is the other one for that. So I guess they have one offensive player, one defensive player. And Bubba, very excited. A great podcast that we like a lot. And we've got a great guy on here for a contributor to that show, right?
Yeah, over the last several months, I've really enjoyed listening to Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. This guy's a weekly guest on there. Welcome into the show, longtime college football analyst Brent Beard. Brent, how are you?
Guys, I'm doing well. It's great to be with you. And, man, you our heads on a swivel right now because there's so many different things that are going on. I'm fairly fresh coming back from SEC Media Days and when the expansion exploded in the midst of that. Look, guys, I don't care how old I get, there is, and you touched on this, always some excitement about week one and opening day with camp and the information that you get with that. So it's a tremendous week, a tremendous month to be a college football fan.
Brent, before we get into talking about the start of camps all throughout college football, you mentioned obviously being at SEC Media Day. We touched on it before we went live. Expansion, Oklahoma, Texas, obviously headed to the SEC. Everybody knows that now. What was the atmosphere like in Hoover when that news broke and it went from being a rumor to looking like it was actually going to happen? And how do you think that's going to affect the league going forward?
I was in the print room, or the big room, as I like to say. Jimbo Fisher was literally walking to the podium, and you get on Twitter the article from the Houston Chronicle that OU and Texas have approached the SEC. Now, the media didn't even flinch. I think the third question to Jimbo was, Coach, what do you think about their support about Oklahoma and Texas joining the league? He answered it well. He just said, look, we're just worried about A&M. If they come in the league, that's fine. We'll welcome them and go from there. So Jimbo handled that well. But guys, I've missed one media day in the SEC since the early 90s, and that was probably the most buzz that we've ever got for media day. Everybody ran to different sources. And now some of this has not been talked about very much, but we don't know when that's going to happen. Now it's going to happen for 2025. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Because Oklahoma and Texas are going to get at least $20 million more per year by going into the SEC. Now, do you think that they're going to wait 4 years to start getting that money? I don't think they will. Now, if they leave the conference, they're going to have to play $80 million apiece in order to do that. But I think that will be negotiated down because, guys, 2011, when A&M and Missouri joined, they were invited in 11. They joined in 12, actually, but they had an exit fee that was basically cut in half. So I think that will happen. But look, it really sent shockwaves through media days and has with excitement. I'm telling you, and you guys understand this with what you do with your podcast, nothing, and I mean nothing besides a coaching change, energizes college football fans like conference expansion. It is unbelievable. And think about this, too. Whenever the teams join, what I've also been told is the first game of their first year will be Texas at Texas A&M to start the season. How about that tasty little nugget out there and what that could be for the offseason leading up to that?
Hey, Brent, how about that? How about that in Jerry's world? That would be fantastic.
Yes. And by the way, speaking of Jerry's world, there as soon as they join, probably the media days before that happens, oh, guess where SEC Media Days will be? Wow. And it will be in Jerry's world. Now, we're scheduled for Atlanta next year, I believe, and then Nashville the year after that, 22 and 23. And that can be rearranged, but look for us to be in Jerry world in not too distant future.
Yeah, the thing that's kind of intriguing me the most about this whole conference realignment thing is you're talking about Texas and Oklahoma. Obviously, want to make the move before 25. And one thing that has been speculated, well, if the Big 12 folds, there will be no exit fee that has to be paid. And there was some you know, talk with ESPN and the conference that we follow closely, the American Athletic Conference, about trying to get some teams from the Big 12 to move over to the American, because will the Big 12 survive this? One thing that I've really been perplexed by, the Pac-12. To me, the Pac-12 has not fared well during the playoff era. They did not fare well towards the end of the BCS era, and yet they're sitting there status quo. They need a presence outside of the Mountain and Pacific time zones. So why they're not making a move right now to at least get two of the Big 12 leftovers, maybe Oklahoma State and Texas Christian. You get that Dallas media market, you get Oklahoma State with some good branding. I have no idea. Does that surprise you that the Pac-12 hadn't made a move?
I think they will, though, Kyle. And here's what's going on. They just got a commissioner. And by the way, the commissioner needs to watch what he's saying when he's talking about delaying the 12-team playoff expansion, because right now that's the only way the Pac-12 is going to get the playoffs. Exactly. So the sooner they can get that going, the better. But Kyle, I think what's probably going to happen with the Pac-12 is they're going to do something with either the Big 12, or there's even a little bit of talk about them maybe doing something with the Big 10. I think they're waiting for the dust to settle a little bit, but don't think there's not a lot going on behind the scenes. And, guys, I can tell you this, geography now is out the window in expansion. Do not also be surprised, and I'm not saying this is going to happen. This is more from deductive reasoning than anything else. Would it shock you at all if there's teams right now who may be talking to Southern Cal with the view to Southern Cal being what we grew up with Southern Cal in maybe 5 to 10 years. Listen, you expand with the future in mind, not just the next 2 to 5 years, but 10 to 20 to 25 years down the road. So keep that in mind when we're talking about expansion.
Yeah, and we talked about that earlier. The SEC may be talking to Clemson or Florida State. And one thing I, was wondering about, if that would put them at 20, maybe then the Big Ten would go to 20 and take schools from the Pac-12, like you're talking about, USC, et cetera, and have two 20-team super leagues, 40 teams, and almost just exclusively play each other, almost like an NFL-type scenario.
Well, you could see that, and there's so many different scenarios going on right now. Report obviously came out earlier today about FSU and Clemson reaching out to the SEC. Now, look, the AD and the president may not have done that, but is it possible some third party did? Absolutely it is. And, guys, if you're FSU and Clemson, and you may have a once in 25 year opportunity to join the SEC, don't you at least look at that and see where that might go? One of my contacts at FSU told me a little bit ago that FSU has absolutely reached out to the SEC, and that would certainly help them. The question is, now, why would the SEC go for those two teams? And I think the reality would be certainly because of the brand. Now, if you guys remember about 10 years ago when we were talking about expansion, there was a lot of thought that the SEC was going to go east. Now, they've got everybody in the West, okay? I think they're pretty happy with that. But do they go east into some of these ACC schools in order to move the footprint? They want brand, they want value, and to extend their footprint somewhere. So that could be into the Virginias, it could be into the Carolinas. And again, remember, guys, the people who are ultimately making this decision are the school presidents and chancellors. And guys, they don't think like we do, that they are looking at academics, the reputation of the league. There are a lot of things that they'll keep in mind for them that maybe the average fans and media don't look at. So I've said this for years, expansion is never dead. It's dormant, but it's never dead.
Well, Brent, one of my questions I would have for you is that as far as the path to the playoff, if you look at Florida State and Clemson, they have an easy path or easier path. And I think that I know Sankey is only cares about the SEC, but if you really look, here's the problem I have with college football is they don't care about the customers. They don't care about the fans. They can say all day long they care about the fans. They do not. They don't have a real playoff. It's a ESPN event that's a made-for-TV event right now. There's a lot of problems with the sport, and I feel like with Oklahoma and Texas, I get the money thing and I get the power of the SEC. But if you look at a situation now with us, you look at an American, we're doing everything that the SEC is doing as far as scholarships. You look at everything we're doing. We don't have the money they have. I understand all that. But if you look on paper, we're doing everything. And right now our school is, even though we're down as far as a football program, when we get that program up and running the next couple of years, like we're headed, a potential top 25 team in the next couple of years, well, we don't stand a chance. We stand no chance to make the playoffs, even with 12 teams, maybe. But that's my frustration has been, we don't like being called a mid-major because we're not. But our frustration is with this whole thing with the SEC is, are you doing it really for the love of the game? For example, right now, college football is always ranked number two in the nation as far as popularity of sport. If they would really do the right thing and do the things for the goodness of the sport, then they would have even more money. They would have even more power. And I don't understand. Sometimes I think as college football, as when we're looking at it and we cover it, I think that we get in our way, especially these commissioners like Sankey. I treat him as a villain until he does something to really help the sport. I understand what his job as commissioner, but also I love college football, period. So,
well, Dave, I agree with that. And look, I'm a big East Carolina fan. I mean, I've followed them for years and now I've covered the SEC most of my career, but I have a great appreciation particularly for the American Conference. I do a lot of radio in Memphis, and we've had this discussion for a while. To me, one of the exciting things about having the playoff expand to 12 teams is not so that the SEC can get seven of them in there, but it's that conferences like the American can finally get to representation where, and people need to understand this, when the East Carolina coaches or the Memphis coaches or whoever you want to pick here sit down with these recruits over the next few years and we go to 12, they can legitimately tell these kids, if you come and play for East Carolina at some point during your career here, you're going to be in the playoffs, and you're going to have a chance to play for a national championship. And they're not lying about that. They're actually telling the truth. So, but Dave, the other thing with is too, is greed is in control. at this point, and there's no question that it's a money grab and a power grab, and we're going to see this, and we've known this for quite a while, that there was going to be a separation between the Power Fives and the non-Power Fives at some point. We're seeing that play out, and I don't think this is the death nail for the East Carolinas of the world. I really don't, because I think the playoff is going to give them a real shot in the arm. But we are not now, right now, when this actually gets laid out, and who knows how long it's going to take, guys, we may be looking at college football in that what we've never seen and may never see again.
Yeah, I think this is just my opinion. And, I thought college football would look like maybe it was in the other direction, in the right direction, with the playoff expanding to 12. But you know, what you say is right. With the SEC going to 16 and potentially 20, or, yeah, 8, what are we at now, 16, 18? How many members
are there? Yeah, 16 with 18 maybe coming soon.
Yeah, potentially 18. Okay. And you know, who knows how the Big Ten is going to respond, et cetera. Before that started happening, I thought, oh, my God, if we go to 12 teams, and, you know, you have your six best conference champions get automatics. I said, you know, that's going to be the fairest things have ever been, ever. You know, if you're UCF the last few years or Cincinnati this past year, you'd have been in the playoffs.
Sure.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, with the grant of, you know, with the players being able to, you know, get their own deals now and make money on their own, where this is all going down the road. But one thing I think that some of these conferences, the SEC, potentially the Big Ten, if you start making it, all right, you know, like you speculated about, you know, we're going to eventually see like an NFL type model where you have 40 teams playing each other from a couple conferences. There already is an NFL. I think one thing that's cool about college athletics is you have hundreds of schools, and the ratings. It's not just SEC fans watching SEC games. It's East Carolina fans. It's Cincinnati fans. It's UCF fans, because we're included in it. We're all Division I. Whether it's Power Five, Group of Five, you know, we all consider ourselves part of the same division because technically we are. If that starts changing,
they're cutting their market.
You're cutting your markets. Exactly. You're cutting your audience, and you're cutting off some pretty damn big media markets. And I think there's an ignorance amongst some of the Power Five conferences. Well, they'll just watch anyway. No, I won't. If as an East Carolina fan, if the SEC or the Big Ten is a separate entity, I'm not watching it.
Well, I get that. And I'll tell you another thing that might come down the pike too, and this is gaining some steam. I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but your non-Power Five schools, at some point, that there's been more talk over the last few years, and I'm sure you guys have probably gotten into this at some point, is if they don't feel that they've got a real shot through the 12 team expansion for the playoffs, do they do something radical as far as virtually breaking off, forming their own situation, having their own TV contract, and having their own playoffs? And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but there's actually been some talk in some TV and coaches that I've talked to that have said, for the non-Power Five, at some point, do they do everything that we just talked about and maybe even move to the spring in order to have it by themselves?
No, we're not moving to the spring. The FCS tried that this past spring. Nobody watched.
See the USFL.
It's not going to happen. Never.
But never. I think the point is that you've got some guys who are forward thinking enough, and they've got to be able to do this. Guys, what are we going to do?
You know what I would have done years ago, and what some of these chancellors and presidents for some of these schools need to do is grow a set of testicles and sue the Power Five conferences for antitrust laws. And, you know, we're all supposed to be Division I, yet we up to this point, there's been no true access to the playoffs, and before that, BCS bowls. Yeah. Tulane started to do that a few years ago, back during the BCS days, and somebody shut them up. Utah started doing the same thing, and they got an invite to the Pac-12. So that's what I would do. And I think if the 12 team expansion of the playoff doesn't provide a path, and I think it will.
I do too.
If it doesn't provide a path, and it looks like that there's going to be a breakaway, then I think it's time to sue, because at that point you got nothing else to lose.
Yeah. Well, I think there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be working on this behind the scenes, but I do think right now, if they can be patient in order to get the expansion, the playoffs, which I frankly still think is coming by 2023. I mean, that's only 2 years from now. And at that point, I think your non-Power Five will have a shot to get a team or two in the playoffs, which is something they have not been able to do. I mean, obviously UCF is near us here in Jacksonville, Florida. And if we would – guys, as you know, if we would have even had an 18 playoff a few years ago, the year they beat Auburn in Atlanta – they would have been the number eight seed. Now, will they have lasted very long? You know, likely, maybe not, but at least they would have had a chance, and which would make it a lot more fair than it is right now.
Well, and plus, what you mentioned is, will they last very long? To me, that's always an irrelevant question, because to me, it's about building. If UCF all of a sudden now has, you know, we'll use UCF for an example because, you know, they've done it a lot recently. If UCF has a path to the playoff in front of them, and they make the playoff this year, then they turn around and make it next year. Well, now suddenly you're getting into recruits' homes you've never been in before.
Sure,
and then absolutely. You build a program, and then the third time they make it in, who knows, they may make it to the national championship game. But now there's no way to build that. All I think Group of Five schools loan is just an opportunity. I think we would be happy with the conference champion getting in and having a shot. And I also think it would be great for college football, and it would be great for ESPN and the TV people.
Sure.
Look, now there's a reason to watch the American Conference Championship game. There's a reason to watch the Mountain West Championship game. God, if Boise State loses to Colorado State and UCF gets upset by East Carolina, or you know, who knows who will be representing the Group of Five.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been beating the drum years to give them a chance, and I have a hope for the first time in quite a while that the expanded playoff would be able to do that.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, Brent, as far as are you hearing with we're on the pretty much the eve of American Media Days. Are you hearing anything about before 10 years ago, 5 years ago, rather, we heard a lot about how the Big 12 was going to raid the AAC. We're hearing that Mike Oresko is going to be aggressive and go after those Texas teams. You see that. Obviously, the American is in Texas. I don't know if that was a move on purpose years ago. I know there were some teams there, and I know that area is such a big growing area in Texas. But are you hearing where the American's going to go after strong after the Big 12 teams, the remaining eight?
I think the greatest thing they've got in their favor is Mike Oresko, frankly. Now, look, I'm sure he has his faults. Not everybody agrees with him. But I think he is one of the guys that has – shouted from the mountaintop, give us a chance and include us into what's going on. And I really applaud him for being able to do that. Yeah, I think they could. I hear the same thing, that they would be very much trying to make some kind of aggressive move. Look, you don't know if you don't try. So and I can tell you guys, those remaining Big 12 teams, they're absolutely looking for a home. And again, we need to say geography doesn't matter here. Some people are going to say, well, that's just not logical. Throw logic out the window, guys, with these conferences right now. So they're going to do everything they can to protect themselves and to try to get some kind of affiliation. Certainly with the Big 12 would be a pretty good move.
Well, one thing that I was thinking about is, whether it's under the American banner or the Big 12 banner, you've got eight teams left in the Big 12. You've got 10 all sports members of the American, not counting Navy and Wichita State. So you have 10 all sports members. 10 and 8 equals 18. which is kind of the SEC's thinking about going to 18. You can make an 18-team league work. You can do, you know, 9-team divisions, so on. I don't think 18 teams would ever play. I think some schools would be poached from to the Pac-12, et cetera. But I think if you merge the two leagues, the 10 all-sports members in the American, your 8 Big 12 members that are left, if you merge the two leagues right now, you have 18 teams and you protect both leagues. That way, if the Pac-12 takes two or three, if the ACC decides they want West Virginia, then you still have a healthy league because they're not going to poach but so many out of the 18.
Right.
Whereas right now, if the Big 12 standing at 8 members, they lose 4 members, the league's done. It's down to 4.
Sure. Sure. Oh, absolutely. Well, and look, as you guys mentioned a few minutes ago, what's important here too, you got some major cities involved with this. You can't ignore that.
Yeah.
As far as these TV ratings and the people in these cities. So I have a lot of confidence in Orasco for what he's probably trying to do, and more than that, what he can get done.
Yeah, no doubt.
One of the things that Kyle brought up, Brent, is NIL, those three letters that we've heard so much about in the last few months. So talk about it, SEC Media Days. Obviously, we had another elephant, the expansion elephant, come in the room. But talk about NIL. I know Nick Saban made some very interesting comments about his quarterback, Bryce Young.
Yeah, but Bryce Young has not played it down as far as a starter. He certainly played at Alabama. But that he's already got – my understanding is the number is like 800,000. It's just amazing. And look, everything Nick Saban says has to do with the recruiting. So just keep that in mind too. So what he was talking to with these future quarterbacks is as far as what they can make. Guys, I have a lot of mixed emotions about this. I mean, I get the point that I've always thought these guys need to get more than they're getting. But yet at the same time, there is value in what they're getting through a scholarship. Mm-hmm. And we can't ignore that either, because I think that's important. I think most fans don't even realize just all that they get in a scholarship, like a clothing allowance. And on the bowl trip, they get a really good amount of money. And travel money that goes through that. But with that aside, NIL is up for grabs, hopefully in a year, maybe after the NCAA has kind of reinvented themselves. They've got that convention coming up in November. That's going to be fascinating to see what they do with that and where they go. I like NIL to a degree because it is able to give some of these kids some more money that they've earned. I do have a concern, too, about what it's going to do for team chemistry. I just think there's some unintended consequences in NIL, guys, that we don't even know about yet. And I'll give you a real example of this hot off the press here. Miles Brennan, the LSU quarterback, as of today, it just came out a little bit ago that he actually has hurt his arm. He's going to have surgery. And as you guys know, he signed a deal. We saw this on Twitter with a car dealership just a few days ago. So it's not only this is a two-pronged thing for NIL. Number one, it's going to be who you have as far as your social media followers. Okay, that's going to determine some of it. But, guys, isn't some of this got to be determined by what you do on the field? And I know it's unfair for Miles Brennan to get hurt again, but the reality of it is, we're just throwing this out here, is this car dealership going to be a little bit antsy about doing this again in the off season and some of these others that read about this? Yes, it's a big subject. Expansion is kind of taking it over now as far as popularity is concerned. But this can be a very fascinating follow over the next few months.
Yeah, I'll a couple of things I'll say about the national letter of intent. What am I talking about? I mean, using the initials to make up my own words. But the name, image, and likeness. careful what you ask for. You keep wanting to be asked to be an employee.
Yeah.
And you're going to be treated like an employee eventually. And it's another thing. You talk about, you know, some unintended consequences. I got a real simple one. How about an 18 or 19 year old millionaire overnight? You know, people can't handle that kind of money that are grown.
Absolutely.
And now you're, you know, got $1 million, $800,000, $500,000, and you're a sophomore in college, freshman to college, junior in college, whatever. I mean, I just can't imagine. This is going to have to be reeled in. I think we're going. I guess they're going to work backwards, but it's going to be the Wild West out there for a couple of years.
Hey, Brent, I was going to say too that Bubba and Kyle are younger than I am, but I remember as a kid with the whole death penalty for SMU and those days when they were giving money, and that's my. I have no problems with the payers, quote unquote, getting paid. My issue is it's not the players that I'm concerned about. It's the shenanigans. We know the shenanigans, I'm sure, go on now, but this seems like it's just legalizing the shenanigans.
That's exactly what it's doing.
And Dave, to your point, are we just legalizing what used to be illegal recruiting?
Yes.
At this point, but now one of the best things when this topic first came up was the possibility of putting this money in a trust, and this goes back to Kyle's point, but put it in a trust that when their eligibility is over, after that, they could get the money. Now that may be what, guys, at least 3 years down the road. I agree with Kyle on this. 3 years down the road, those kids, I would hope, would be a whole lot more mature than they are at this point in their career, particularly if you're a freshman getting that kind of money. But again, we don't even know if anything like that's going to happen right now. So at least they're working through the school. But I just see some things. And, guys, you understand business that this may seem like a wonderful deal for some of these businesses, but these players have got to be careful. And what that means is, now, if you sign a great deal on Thursday and then Friday night you're out celebrating and you get a DUI or you tear the bar up wherever you are and everybody finds out about that, if that business reneges on that deal after that happens, these guys better be aware of the consequences of their action during the year.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I was saying. You're going to be treated like an employee. And, you know, a lot of these kids are not ready for that. So, something else that I had thought about in passing, you know, you got a certain level of booster that's going to be all over this. You know, the guy who owns that car dealership, they love it. But you got Joe Blow booster. You know, there's a lot of people that donate at the minimum level. They donate, $100, $200 a year just to say they're a member of whatever club, whatever the booster club is, the minimum amount. Well, when you see players walking around now getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a deal, and you look and you go, dang, they're making more money than I do. What am I contributing to their scholarships for? You're going to see some people pulling their money.
Well, and don't think schools aren't looking at that, Kyle, because I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that, look, that scares some of these athletic departments. They're thinking, instead of us getting a check, is that check going to the player or players? So listen, whether they admit it or not, that's a concern in some of these athletic departments.
Hey, Brent, go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry, I just had a quick question, Bubba. As far as one of the things I thought about, and I wanted to ask you, being that you cover the SEC, how about the stakes are on the line, SEC championship game? I'm a wide receiver. I drop a pass. If I catch the pass, we win the SEC, and we lose a playoff spot because I dropped the pass. Legally, can they just say, all right, you're fired, you're gone, you don't have a –
contract to sign, Dave. It depends probably the workings of your contract.
No one would – I don't think anybody would put up with that, but I get your point in that. And, and to that point, if you're a business and you've got a – deal with that player? Is that what's going through the CEO's mind at that point, during that time too? So look, I again, we can come up with a lot of difficult scenarios that might happen here.
Do you know? And I would hope this has been addressed. Do you know with these deals these players can sign? Let's use the car dealership for example.
I missed some of that, Dave, but I know the schools have done what they can to at least come up with their own rules. Listen, these schools, guys, have done better, frankly, than the NCAA in coming up with rules as far as NIL is concerned. The incident, and again, this is revisionist history, but the NCAA should have dealt with this about 3 to 5 years ago. And if they had, it may never have gotten to the point that it is now, if they would have really tried. But believe me, the coaches and the schools, I think, have done a fairly good job in trying to get ahead of what might happen here and make the players very aware of what they can do and what they can't do.
I guess we lost Bubba there. We're having some technical difficulties here tonight, but I know one of the questions we had a fan that was chiming in on YouTube, and he's asking, Mark Calloway is asking about ECU social media. How does that compare to the SEC as far as he's asking actually the size of the market?
Very quickly, I was just going to clarify. I think he was meaning more as far as maybe television market after I asked my clarifying question, because that's one of the things that Terry Holland really, really emphasized. No, Greenville's not a large market like a lot of the SEC markets, but Pirate fans tune in when the Pirates are on TV, much more so than some of those teams that are in those, quote, large markets, like an SMU or whatever, fill in the team. But I think that's an excellent point as far as East Carolina, because, I mean, and the Pirates have a large fan base in Charlotte and the Raleigh Triangle area.
Well, one thing I'll mention with that, Bubba, is something that I've always thought. Sometimes it's not just your fan base, it's if the rest of the state pays attention to you. And when East Carolina's winning, North Carolina and North Carolina State fans watch our games because we have a genuine rivalry with them. That's something that Cincinnati can't say about Ohio State, and UCF can't say about Florida and Florida State. We have a rivalry with NC State and North Carolina. So we draw all eyeballs in this state when we're winning. But before I got cut off, my question was, and I hope this has been addressed with the name, image, and likeness. The car dealership, we'll use, you know, Holt Naylor's, the East Carolina quarterback. Let's say he has a contract with East Carolina Chrysler Dodge Jeep, and they can't put in his contract that if you throw 4 touchdown passes this Saturday, you get a bonus, can you?
No, I don't. I'll say this, Kyle. I've seen some of what the schools have done, and I haven't seen anything like that. I mean, there may be some fine print in there, but frankly, no, I have not seen that. But I will be interested to see if there's something that almost gets close to that. But no, I don't think you've got a situation like that right now.
Okay. Guys, got anything else?
Brent, very quickly before we let you go, obviously Georgia's favored to win the East. JT Daniels emerged late last season, and a lot of folks, you know, are saying, is this the year Kirby Smart breaks through? What are your thoughts on the Bulldogs?
I do think that Georgia wins the East. Now, we're about an hour and a half from Gainesville, so the Gator fans down here won't like to hear that, especially after last year and winning. But they've got, as Kyle mentioned, the reality is they've got an established quarterback in JT Daniels. Florida doesn't, although Emory Jones, what we know, is probably going to be the guy. And look out for Anthony Richardson. He could be too, but pretty much everybody's picking Georgia. Listen, guys, I've seen some unusual Eastern Division predictions. Cole Kubelik, I don't know if you've seen this or not, has it Georgia, Kentucky, and then Florida. So wow. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of that, but I do love Mark Stoops and the job that he's done. Now, Georgia's defense, like guys like Tyke Smith, they really bolster that secondary by adding him. Kirby Smart, will tell you real quick, his concerns the offensive line and some of the guys that they've got to replace there. But to me, the big deal is going to be I think it's going to be Georgia, Florida. And guys, who's that third team going to be? Is that going to be Missouri? Eli Drinkwith, I think, done a good job, makes some inroads. Connor Basilek at quarterbacks is one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Kentucky, I think's got a lot of the needed ingredients, but they really don't have a quarterback yet. And obviously, everybody's going to pick Alabama in the West. But the question is, who's going to be number two? And I'll be honest with you, as much love as there is for A&M, until tonight, I was really picking LSU because I thought you'd have two capable quarterbacks, Miles Brennan and Max Johnson. But now with Brennan out for an extended period of time, man, that's not going to make that easy at all for LSU. And Jimbo has got probably his best team. He's got to find a quarterback too. So we think it's going to be Alabama and Georgia, but there are a lot of question marks with not only those teams, but the rest of the league too.
Has Ole Miss done anything to improve their defense?
Yes. Believe it or not, they have. They've got all this a lot of publicity about how good the offense is going to be, and they'll still have some 45-40 games. But I think in recruiting, that's one of the things that they basically wanted to do is to improve defensively, particularly the defensive line. And look, that's why A&M is so good right now, is because their A&M's defensive line is of SEC quality right now. But for Ole Miss, I mean, Sam Williams is in there. I think he'll be okay. They've got some pretty good linebackers that they can get up to the line, Lakia Henry, Jacquez Jones, for instance. But, I mean, you hit it, though. Ole Miss will not be where Lane Kiffin wants them to be until their defense is totally SEC quality.
Yeah, and another thing from the West that I thought last year overachieved, maybe not in the record books, but just the way they played. I thought Arkansas in year one there was pretty good.
Look, Sam Pittman's done a really good job. Pittman coming from Georgia, obviously, and he's got Arkansas ties. They love him there. I mean, they won three games, and people say, well, what's the big deal with three games? Well, three games is a big achievement, as you guys know, compared to the previous year with where they were. They don't have Felipe Franks. That's going to be fascinating to see. You know Pittman's going to have an offensive line. And look, don't you know, guys, you think they've got that Texas game circle already in Jerry's world? Does that game have a little more emphasis now than it did, oh, say, a month ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, return to the robbery.
I had one
now,
more.
Now, Brent, down through the years, you've obviously been to a lot of SEC media days, but this was your first with Mike Leach due to COVID last year. What was it like with the Pirate captain there?
I love Leach. I think he's tremendous. Leach said they asked him about I think it was a 64 team playoff, and Leach said, yeah, that'd be a good start. So listen, you're always going to get a great comment from him. I really do expect one day that he is going to come into media days dressed up as Jimmy Buffett with the guitar and probably play a song or two in his sandals. But look, don't overestimate or underestimate Leach. He's a tremendous football coach. And when he gets his roster redone, they will this year too, they're going to be a real handful coming up.
I have one more question for you, Brent. Speaking of coaches and new coaches.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Brent, we appreciate you being so generous with your time.
He's late.
Going about.
Bubba.
What happened, Kyle?
It's you can't hear Dave. You can't hear Dave, Bubba. But Dave was in the middle of a question. You just cut him off.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Go ahead,
go,
Dave.
Go ahead, Dave. Bubba can't hear.
Dave, I apologize. I don't know. I was waiting for Dave to speak up. I wasn't hearing a thing. So.
All right. Brent, I have one more for you, and then we'll let you go. Sorry. I was going to ask you about we being in East Carolina, have a big game, the second game of the season, our first home game against South Carolina. We love Shane Beamer. I think he's a great coach. We're concerned about, obviously, with South Carolina. In fact, that game is going to be more or less like a bowl game for us between the two teams on who goes to a bowl game or not. How do you think – how does Shane Beamer get –
look, he may have been the star of media days. Beamer was tremendous, frankly. I mean, Beamer was, and you can appreciate this, after he spoke, you know, people wanted to sign up and go play for him type thing. Now, look, they don't have the players there they need yet. The Doty kid at quarterback is good. Kevin Harris running back. Now they've got a pretty deep running back room. But let's just be honest, that they just don't have it yet. I think they will later on down the line. But Beamer's shown some promise early on. Josh Heupel, I thought, was pretty bland. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt was okay. He played at Vandy. And Brian Harsin at Auburn, he was the last guy, so a lot of them wanted to get out of there to go home. But for the ones who stuck around, and I thought Harsin did okay too. He really doesn't have the players at Auburn that he needs to have there either. But by far, I thought of the new coaches, Shane Beamer was the best.
Yeah, Shane's a guy that's interesting to me. I always kind of thought he might get an opportunity at a Group of Five East Carolina. I know Old Dominion came up in 2 years ago, and I really thought ODU would hire him. And lo and behold, he gets his first opportunity at an SEC school in South Carolina. I'm going to say this now, and I haven't said this yet on the podcast, but since we got an SEC guy on, I look at South Carolina. I know what we got coming back. We got 10 back on offense, 10 back on defense, we being East Carolina. First home game of the year. South Carolina opens up with Eastern Illinois. We open up with App State. We're going to know a lot about ourselves after week one. I don't think they're going to know very much. Just watch out when the Gamecocks come to Greenville, because I think we might have something for them.
Look, could East Carolina win that game? Absolutely. I don't deny that at all. I think I'm not ready to make the prediction yet until we get through fall camp. But you guys will be more than competitive in that game.
Yeah.
No question. And Brent, some back history quickly, and then I promise we'll let you go. 2019, they pulled out on us for that game, and we had to schedule Gardner Webb for that. No offense to Gardner Webb, but, you know, they've waited a long time to come to Greenville, and they've made every excuse in the book. So there's still Pirate fans and Pirate Nation, Brent, to let you know, that don't think that game's going to happen. They'll pull out the last one.
Well, I would feel better about it now with the game just a few weeks away instead of a few years away.
Always hurricanes. Hurricanes.
But what you're saying is Pirate fans have long memories in situations like this, correct?
Exactly. That's right. Brent, how can we follow your work before we let you go?
Well, I appreciate that. On Twitter, at Brent Beard, B-E-A-I-R-D. We have all the vowels. And also, I'm the college football analyst for First Coast News here in Jacksonville. We have the ABC and the NBC stations. Matter of fact, the Olympics are on there now. And also, College Sports Today is a Facebook Live that I do with Terry Norvell. But certainly on Twitter, try to cover all kinds of college football. And if folks are busy during the day, that they can check my Twitter account and get caught up. But guys, thank you for what you do. Appreciate it greatly. Enjoyed being with you.
Enjoy to give our best to Shane when you talk to him again. We like
absolutely.
This. All right. Take care,
guys. Thank bye-bye. You.
Good night. All right. Great to have Brent Beard with us. And I tell you what, Kyle, we've got another great guest. We'll go ahead and get to John Whitaker, Big Game Boomer. Is he known for a very busy man, I'm sure. How are you doing, Big Game Boomer?
Good. How's it going?
Great, great to have you on. Have you slept in the last couple of weeks? In the last 2 weeks, we're checking on your health.
I'm probably sleeping like a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of took the last couple days off, just with all this expansion talk. I've really kind of just settled in and just kind of let all this play out. It's kind of crazy what's going on right now.
Yeah, with Texas and Oklahoma, you know, obviously you guys are going over to the SEC. To me, the real question is, what's going to happen with the Big 12, the eight remaining members? You know, we talked about it with the previous guest. You know, to me, I look at the Pac-12. And I think about how poorly they've performed during the playoff era and in the end of the BCS era also. And I look at how they don't get any attention outside of the West Coast and the Mountain Time Zone, the Pacific and Mountain Time Zones, and how going into Texas would be a benefit to them. You know, at least two, maybe TCU and Oklahoma State. Do you think Pac-12 will make that move, or do you think the Big 12 will survive?
You know, I truly don't think the Big 12 will survive. You know, specifically with the Pac-12, you know, they don't allow religious schools into their conference. So, like, teams like Baylor and TCU wouldn't be able to make it. And then, you know, there's that – the Pac-12 and Big Ten and the ACC are very stingy on this AAU accreditation.
Okay.
That it's some sort of academic ranking that only Iowa State and Kansas have.
Okay.
So –
I know the Big Ten was like that. I didn't know the Pac-12 was.
Yeah, yeah. Both conferences are kind of like that. So, you know, I honestly see the Big 12. I don't think it survives. I see the AAC and the Big 12, you know, combining at some point. I think I think in the long run, I could see the Big 12 or excuse me, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 kind of merging or having some sort of, you know, the Big Ten gets USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon. I could see something like that since there's so many the Pac-12 and Big Ten are very similar from a lot of different viewpoints.
Kyle, I've
heard do you think the Big 12 when you say the Big 12 doesn't survive and they merge with the American, then so you think they're gonna it's gonna be under the American label then?
Yeah, I truly do.
Hey, Kyle, I had an interesting thing I wanted to point out to you guys. I've heard that the American, is this true? I don't know if you've heard this, John, Big Game Boomer. I've heard that the American is offering Oklahoma State and some of their schools like TCU a bigger share of the TV revenue. Have you guys heard about that?
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I have not heard that, but, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I honestly think the AAC has been stronger from top to bottom than the Big 12 for maybe the past couple of years. So,
there's rumors that ESPN has offered significantly more money to us, meaning the American. We follow the American, for East Carolina guys, to the American. If the Big 12 schools come aboard, I think the Big 12, what was the Big 12 schools making? $20 million apiece.
So yeah, around there.
Without Texas and Oklahoma, I would imagine the value would be, God, at best $10 million apiece. I think more around $8 million apiece, which is basically what the American is making now. So if you can merge the two, you could get back up to that $20 million mark. I would have no problem with the eight Big 12 members for the first, say, 3 years of the TV contract to make an extra, you know, if you, let's just say it's $20 million. Those eight Big 12 schools getting $15 million. Or excuse me, we get $15 million, they get $25 million. The eight Big 12 members for the first 5 years of TV contract or whatever, whatever it takes to make the deal happen, is what I would do if I was Mike Oresko, Commissioner of the American.
Yeah, I think anything he can do to get some of those Big 12 schools to want to come to the AAC would definitely be beneficial for the conference, for sure.
Now, what is Oklahoma State doing? I mean, you're a Sooner, so you know you probably have a good idea what the Cowboys are doing. I mean, they got a lot of money.
Yeah,
they got to be. I would imagine living at this point.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I mean, my wife went to OSU. It's not a happy household in the big Game Boomer house. So yeah, I mean, I've heard multiple things. I mean, the Pac-12, the ACC, or the AAC. But yeah, they're not happy. right now. They think OU kind of went behind their back because traditionally OU and OSU has always been a package deal. You know, back when they did realignment, what was it, 10 years ago? OU and OSU were a package deal. So, yeah, I don't know what they do. I honestly wish that it was OSU coming to the SEC instead of Texas, just because I feel like it makes – I feel like OSU would be a better fit. And I feel like Texas is kind of to blame for where the Big 12 is right now. And it's like they're kind of just leaving and just, you know, hanging them out to dry where, you know, with the Longhorn Network, they ran off Nebraska and A&M, and now they're getting to run away to the SEC while everyone else has to, you know, fend for their own. I would have rather seen OSU come, but, you know, Texas is Texas. They're a huge market. So, I mean, I get why they want them in the SEC.
And I'm hearing the Oklahoma State, by the way, John, I'm hearing that, the American is trying to lure them in by, and you guys being with the Sooners are always in their shadow. They're in your shadow, I should say. And I'm hearing that the American, Mike Oresko and the folks are saying, hey, come to the American where you can be like the marquee school. You can be like the big dog or one of the big dogs where you don't have to be in the shadow of Oklahoma or Texas or any of the teams.
How would Oklahoma State feel about being in the same conference with Tulsa?
That was a question.
I don't think they would. Yeah, I don't think they would like it at all. I mean, they're a very proud program. I mean, they've got the most national. I mean, they have a ton of national championships throughout all of their sports. Right. So yeah, it would make for a great rivalry, but I think they would see it as a step down. But you know,
sure.
I don't. If we go to this 12-team playoff format, I don't really see it as a step down. I see it as a, you know, a good move. I mean, there's some good schools.
If you take the Big 12 schools and you combine them with the American schools and you have an 18 team league, if we go to the 12-team playoff, yeah, it will every year be one of the six best conferences. If not, you could argue fifth best with where the Pac-12.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
I think that's one of the things I was going to ask you, John, is the if they do that merger, it looks like to me what I'm hearing, like between national media and stuff, rating and stuff, it seems like to me, Kyle's alluded to it, it looks like the Pac-12, maybe, you know, you look like the Big 12 schools are the big losers like at the moment, but it could be the Pac-12 on the sidelines and all of a sudden they get left behind because there's a lot of people don't watch those games. We always hear about that every year. You hear about the Heisman voters that they don't stay up late enough unless it's a really, really phenomenal athlete as far as, you know, getting the Heisman or look, you know, to votes there. So I'm just wondering, you know, if they don't get – because I'm hearing a lot of the thing with the Big Ten's not going to expand. I'm hearing there's a potential the ACC is not going to expand. The Pac-12, they're talking about right now on the surface, they're not going to expand. But if they don't expand, they could be left behind and not in the way – I don't know. There seems to be like this – I don't know if it's aloof is the right word or arrogance is the right word, but they're just like, we're the Pac-12, and I'm going – well, you guys haven't been doing much lately in the playoff.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's the academic side of things that they turn their nose to the Big 12 schools. That it has so much to do with it, and it really surprises me because you know athletics and academics are really two different things. But you know, if I'm the AAC, I go after Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State. Those are the four teams that I would target if I was the commissioner of the AAC.
I got to go West Virginia also.
Oh, God, yeah. I forget about West Virginia. You forget about them when they're so far up there. Yeah, switch Texas Tech and West Virginia.
I go after all eight. I really do. I think the league should just merge and protect themselves. Have an 18-team league. That way, if anybody comes to take anybody, you're protected, whether it's the ACC, Pac-12, or whatever. If you have 18 teams all together, then you're protected.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it seems like the SEC is looking to go to 18 teams. So, yeah, it's an arms race right now for sure.
John, would you also look at one of the things Americans have been looking at, the teams we always hear about? I know that you were talking about the religious part for the Pac-12. Maybe that's why. I tell you what, I love BYU. I love Boise State. I know the folks at Air Force are not happy being in there, speaking of time zones, and they're not – Coach Cohen, those guys are not happy at all about, you know, when they're playing. But is it possible that you add more? I mean, because if you're looking at these super leagues that we're hearing about, is that a way to put yourself in an even bigger position than you were before?
You know, I've heard a little bit about that, you know, with adding Boise and BYU. I mean, honestly, the Big 12 should have added two more teams, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago when they were looking to expand, and they didn't do it. And, you know, look where they are now. I mean, I don't know if Bob Bowlesby will make that decision to expand. I think, you know, you lose two schools like OU and Texas. It's just so hard to compensate for that. So, you know, and if you're a Cincinnati or a UCF and the Big 12 comes calling, do you go to the Big 12? I mean, if I'm UCF, I maybe look at just staying in the AAC. I mean, at this point, it just seems like it's a better conference right now. So
yeah, I think you would look at it because it sounds sexy. Go to the Big 12, but you know, like you say, there's not a lot more money there without Texas and Oklahoma. I keep going back to me, the thing to do is merge. To me, that's where each individual institution protects themselves. Their strength in numbers, the leagues protect themselves, whether it's under the American banner or the Big 12 banner. And you know, I think you can create a lot of value with an 18 team mega conference. And you know, then if the Pac 12 comes and takes two, or the Big 10 decides they want Iowa State and Kansas, then you got 16 teams. Or maybe the Big 12 takes two. Excuse me, maybe the Big Ten takes two and then the ACC takes two. Hey, well, you still got 14 teams. To me, you're just protecting yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, the AAC's already – I mean, they're already out, you know, in Oklahoma and Texas. Yeah. So, I mean, that makes the most sense to me, honestly. And I'd love to see it happen.
Go ahead.
Tulsa almost beat Oklahoma State last year. So, I mean, that would be a yeah, there'd be some cool rivalries, you know, SMU, TCU, having them in the same conference. I mean, I think it'd be, you know, adding Houston, playing those Texas schools, it'd be fun.
Well, now you got West Virginia getting their Big East rivals back with Cincinnati and South Florida. East Carolina and West Virginia have a lot of history. West Virginia, it's a UCF. It would be great for West Virginia recruiting, I'm sure, to go to Florida a couple times a year. So, I think
West Virginia
really could work.
Yeah, West Virginia, ECU would be I could see that being a great rivalry.
You know, going back several years to the George O'Leary, I guess there 2 or 3 years from the end of his tenure at UCF, when they played Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl, and it seems like Baylor was a huge favorite, and then UCF ended up blowing them out.
I'm not sure
that was Bobby, you faded out.
Stuck with Baylor for a while, but just from the standpoint of some of these programs, obviously UCF has done a lot of great things the last few years, but some of these schools may not have the household names that some of the Big 12 schools do, but they play excellent football.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree 100%.
So we thought about everybody around the Sooners. Let's talk about the Sooners. You've got to be a lot of excitement for Oklahoma moving into the Big 12. I mean, moving into the SEC. Has there been any, you know, have you heard any fans going, why are we doing this? Why don't we just stay put? Is the path is easier to the playoff?
Yeah, that's the only argument that I've heard is, you know, we can get to the playoff so easily in the Big 12. You know, why leave? And I'm like, well, there's a reason why we can't win in the playoff when we get there. And that's because we're in the Big 12. We can't get the big time defensive linemen, offensive linemen, you know, all the blue chip recruits to come to the Big 12 because everyone wants to go play in the AC or the SEC. So that's the only argument that I've really, really heard is just, you know, because it's easy to get to the playoff. So, but yeah, most fans are pretty excited about it.
And you talk about the defense, obviously Alex Grinch, a tremendous defensive coordinator, and a lot of folks, I think, including Phil Steele, thinks that this may be the year that Oklahoma not only you know, gets back to the playoff, but then wins a playoff game and goes all the way to national title, maybe.
Yeah, definitely big expectations. I mean, I think that OU definitely is in a position to win a playoff game this year. Their defense is arguably better than their offense. Guys like Perrion Winfrey and Woody Washington and Nick Bonito, just some studs on the defense that are coming back this year. And it should be big expectations for the Sooners.
Obviously, with East Carolina, we know Lincoln Riley very well. Out of curiosity, what is a fan base? What do they think about Lincoln? We obviously were thinking that eventually Ruffin McNeil would retire and that Lincoln would be kind of like a coach in waiting. There was a thought of that maybe back, say, like 2013, 14 before he left, something like that. Obviously, he gets one of the best jobs in college football. He's closer to home at his home state of Texas. But how are the fans there with Oklahoma? How do they like him?
I would say he's very well liked around the entire fan base. OU fans are very fond of ECU because they, I sometimes go back and watch some of those old ECU games back when he was the offensive coordinator with Ruffin McNeil as the coach. Cause I mean, that offense was fire. I mean, it was great to watch. It's very similar to OU's today. Stuff you hear about Lincoln is taking his foot off the gas when OU's up big and, play calling at the end of games. But, there's criticism. You can find criticism for anybody. So I'd say he's doing a pretty good job. Just got to win a playoff game this year is the goal, I think. And if you win a national championship, even better.
I guess we lost. Sorry about that. I guess we lost.
That's all right.
John, as far as when you're talking about Oklahoma, when we're talking about the path and we were talking about that, we talked a lot about expansion, moving to the SEC. As far as Oklahoma and Texas, do you feel like there's going to be more pressure? I mean, when you look at things right now, Oklahoma and Texas are used to, I know we're talking about the, as far as the, it's easier to get there and all that. But as far as do you think with the SEC, what happens if, say, for Lincoln Riley, and I'm saying he's a great coach, we love him at East Carolina, but let's say he's not getting to the we're talking about the playoffs and, the four teams. Like, how much more pressure is that going to put him as far as the hot seat when you have Texas, Oklahoma, you have Arkansas, you have Alabama, Auburn? I mean, there's so many, Florida, Georgia. You could start rattling off all the great teams at SEC, and those fan bases are rabid too.
Yeah, no, I think the pressure increases for sure. And, you're not going to see as many, OU's not going to win the SEC every year. That's just, there's no way with all the talent and all those teams in the league. That's something fans are going to have to get used to because, for the last two decades, basically, OU has run the Big 12. And, I don't think that's going to be the case in the SEC. It's much more competitive. I think the fan base is also looking forward to that because, you look at like OU's home schedule, they get tired of seeing Kansas State, Texas Tech coming into town. You get some of these big, SEC schools coming in to Norman. I mean, that's what all the fans are excited about is just all the teams that you're going to get to play and all the matchups, and they're going to get excited about it. Now, if they lose, it'll be another story, but right now everyone's really excited about it.
Did Oklahoma move into the SEC get the stamp of approval from everybody's favorite Oklahoma fan, good old JR?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't seen what he's posted on Twitter, but I would imagine.
Yeah, like you had to think about who that was.
Well, I thought you said R.J. Young.
No, good old J.R.
Jim Ross.
Yeah, Jim Ross, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. I bet he's excited about it.
Well, I'm hearing that, John, as far as money-wise, I'm hearing $80 to $90 million a year. $80 to $90 million a year. Our athletic budget at East Carolina is $45 million. So that's double just on television rights alone.
Yeah.
for Alabama, Oklahoma, and Texas. That's just hard to imagine. And then when you factor in, I mean, I guess what is it, $245 million is what Texas has a year as far as their budget, somewhere up there. And then you add, I guess it's going to be a little bit more than that.
What happened to the Longhorn Network?
That's gone, isn't it?
I think it's going to go away. ESPN's has been losing money on that for years. Yeah. So I think they'll be happy for it to go away. But yeah, it's going to help out not just football. I mean, it's going to be huge for other sports as well. I mean, I'm a big softball guy. I can't wait to watch OU and Texas compete in the SEC for softball. I mean, stuff like that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, if it's truly, I mean, I'll believe that when I see it, but if it's truly $80 million per school per year for media rights with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the league, I mean, at what point do you tell Mississippi State, Kentucky, and Ole Miss, hey, guys, you're going to have to take a smaller check? This is, I mean, yeah, that's... You ain't contributing. You know, is the expectation 80 to 90 million for media rights? What do you hear?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I mean, that is an insane amount of money. So you're going to see new facilities for all of the sports at OU in Texas.
Wow. I can't, at what point, you know, I was asking, previous guest this about the name, image, and likeness, about how some boosters may go, well, why am I giving the school money for fund scholarships when some of these players are making more money than me? At what point do some of these boosters look, well, you're getting enough money for media rights deals, why do I need to write a $500 check?
That's a great point. I mean, I guess we'll cross that road when we get there. But yeah, some of these deals that some of these guys are signing right now are just crazy. I mean, you've got the Alabama quarterback, Bryce Young, he's a millionaire. He hasn't played a down yet at Alabama. I mean, talk about being under pressure during the first game. So, yeah, it's crazy the money that these guys are going to make with some of these endorsements and stuff.
And I would bet too, John, that with speaking of endorsements, who's to say we're talking about the, you know, like with the previous guest about, you know, a guy dropping a pass in SEC championship game, and does he get cut, you know, like the wave, like the, you know, pros. But also, what about these endorsement deals? If you have a local car dealership that's, say, a big Alabama supporter, right? They give a big check to the quarterback, and then he's a bust. I mean, he's never played. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's crazy about this whole thing is that what happens if you're not successful on the field? And I guess that's between them, but I think there's a lot of unknowns that because it's brand new and they're all of a sudden this money's just going to these players and nobody's thinking about on either side, the people they're giving the money and the people that are taking the money.
Yeah, no, we're in uncharted territory right now. Stuff like that. I would assume there's stuff like that in the contract agreements that these guys sign, or in the contract language. But yeah, you're going to see stuff like that all the time. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, I do feel bad for, you know, like Alabama. I wonder if this is going to create tension in locker rooms.
Yeah.
When you've got, you know, a quarterback and the running back are making hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then, you know, you've got some of the offensive line that are, you know, really not getting any endorsements or anything. How's that going to affect the team chemistry is what I'm kind of interested to see, because I think it will play a big factor in it. I really do.
Well, I can guarantee you this. Whether the offensive line is getting an endorsement deal or not, if your quarterback's a millionaire and you value your life and you want to continue being a millionaire, you better be giving them boys on the other line a little bit of your cash.
I would too. I'd be taking them out for steak dinners and
more than that,
all kinds of stuff.
I mean, you're a millionaire. You can afford to give each one of those starting offensive linemen, you know, 10, 20 grand each.
I mean, yeah, like, get them mopeds to drive around campus and all kinds of good stuff.
Big game over. We have a question from one of our loyal viewers and listeners, Johnny Gardner. I'll put it up on the screen for you. He said, thoughts on opening the season at Tulane?
So, you know, Tulane has a pretty good offense. That Pratt, the quarterback, he's good. So I definitely think it's not a, a game that OU can just walk in and, you know, sleepwalk and win by 40. I think it's going to be – I think OU wins by 21-plus points, but I think Tulane's got a – is a good squad. And, you know, I think they're going to be contending the AAC this year. I think I picked them to finish third, really high on that offense that they've got down there in New Orleans.
They lose Will Hall. Was their offensive coordinator. He became Southern Miss head coach. So their offense, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I believe they brought in Notre Dame's former offensive coordinator. So their head coach traditionally is a triple option guy back when he was at Georgia
Southern.
So
is it Fritz?
Yeah, Will Fritz, yep.
Yeah,
It'll be interesting to see what they run on offense this year. I think they did lose a lot on that defensive line. They had a defensive line that probably was the strength of their team. It was with the exception of Cincinnati, it was the best defensive line in the American. They lost a lot on that side of the ball. So I think Oklahoma, I think you guys will probably drop, you know, your typical big numbers on them. But I wouldn't be surprised, depending on what they do on offense. They can score on you. It depends. Like I said, losing Will Hall is a big deal. I could see Tulane being just as good or better than they were last year, or I could see them taking a step back. They lose a lot on defense, and losing Will Hall as OC is a big deal.
Yeah, no, that is a big deal. He was a good coach, and, yeah, I think he'll do all right at Southern Miss.
Hey, and being a Mississippi guy too, Johnny Gardner has some more questions for you, Big Game Boomer. Let's put those up. Everyone excited about Porter. He says, see Trey Young has been back and connected with him. Look forward to an opening matchup at the men's basketball tourney.
Porter. Oh, yeah. Our new basketball head coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great hire. Coming from Loyola, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he does at OU because he was in Chicago and he used that recruiting kind of network to do well there and get guys from, you know, in the city. So, you know, I'm interested to see how he does. From what I've seen, he's all over campus, just involved in everything, doing all the right things. So we'll see. The thing with college basketball is it just like the roster is just like and it's, it mess. Changes. I mean, it's like
crazy.
I mean, who are I don't even know who, you know, half the team is this year. I mean, it just changes every year. So, you know, change it. Definitely that sport is changing just as much as football. But, you know, he's been to the Final Four. So I think it was a great hire by Joe Castiglione.
Yeah. And as Johnny Gardner mentioned, the Pirates, East Carolina and Oklahoma will play early in the season down in Myrtle Beach in a tournament. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. November.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah. That'll so we have
down in Myrtle Beach.
That's right.
There's a lot of fun. Kyle could get in way too much fun down at Myrtle Beach, but that's a whole
other show. Good golf courses down there.
No question about it. That very thing we're talking about, I want to ask you about the transfer portal. That's something that we talk about a lot on that. We talk about name, image, and likeness on here. We've been talking about it's been a crazy year. We're talking about, obviously, the transfer portal, the playoff expansion, 12 team. Now we're talking about realignment. And then, I mean, but this whole thing about the transfer portal, when you talk about basketball, I think that's where it's first been noticed. But for football, baseball, everywhere, it's going to hurt. And basically what it is what I've been calling since day one is free agency for college sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm all for the kids, you know, wanting to make their decision and what, you know, what's best for them. But, you know, in a way, from a head coaching standpoint, you really have to recruit your players throughout the whole time they're at the school. Because if you do something that upsets them, they can just easily leave and transfer to, you know, a school, you know, the next day. So, yeah, it is free agency, basically. I mean, you saw Lincoln, you know, you saw OU basically take a bunch of guys from Tennessee's roster and didn't really sign any recruits at the end of the recruiting season last year because they, you know, got their needs through the transfer portal. So I think you're going to see a lot of teams do that, especially teams that are, you know, not that don't get the big blue chip recruits. You know, like I think of like a South Carolina, I could, you know, Shane Beamer, I think he's going to exploit the transfer portal and get a lot of guys in there to you know, be successful, because 4- and 5-star guys, most of those guys are going to be going to Georgia and Clemson. So you got to find somewhere where you can get some sort of, you know, quality players with some, you know, to build your roster up. So it's interesting for sure. It's just so different than it was 10 years ago.
Who I think is going to really kill is schools like Marshall that take non-qualifiers. You're going to have kids go there 1 year, get their academics straight, and leave.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to trickle down to the FCS level as well. I read an article that the FCS is going to be like the minor leagues of FBS. You know, you're going to get guys auditioning, basically playing down there to go, you know, play for a FBS school.
No question about it. And that's one thing that we've been talking about a lot, including our former guest, is we're wondering how that's going to affect us with East Carolina being, which we hate, the Group of Five, Power Five. We're all Division One. How is that all going to play out? That's another thing that we've been talking about a lot in the show, because it affects our school so much.
We actually have a transfer from Oklahoma. His name escapes me right now. Rosenbaum.
Yeah, first Ryan. He's now
outside linebacker for Oklahoma. We moved to the tight end. He got play. He was on the field for you guys at outside linebacker. Got significant playing time.
Yeah. No, you're going to see all kinds of guys like that making moves. I've seen a lot of these guys. You know, they go to Ohio State and then they're from, you know, Greenville, South Carolina, or Charlotte. So they transfer, you know, to a school back closer to home.
Ryan Jones from Charlotte. He was from Charlotte. And I remember him from being from Charlotte. He goes out to Oklahoma. I tell you what, as far as athletically, he's one of the most athletic guys that East Carolina has. And thank you, Lincoln Riley. But he's a guy that really has a chance to, you know, it's one of those words, potential. Potential can break either way. It can be a good thing or a bad thing, but he has a lot of potential to do a lot on the field. I don't think he's traditionally what you would say a traditional tight end, but I think he's one of those guys that can be like a playmaker when you think of another offensive, really nice piece to that side of the ball.
Yeah, no, definitely. In talking about playmakers for East Carolina, I am a big fan of Tyler Snead. I think he's an exciting young kid to watch, you know, on special teams and, you know, wide receiver. He's, you know, one of the best for the Pirates right now.
We have a tradition of taking undersized walk-on wide receivers and making them pretty good.
Wide receiver you, baby. Wide receiver you. Just ask Lincoln Riley on that. Hey, big game boomer, before we let you go, my friend John, where can people find your work? And obviously, good luck to the Sooners. It's going to be an interesting thing on the field and off the field for your team this year.
Yeah, you can find me on Big Game Boomer Twitter, and we're just doing all kinds of fun stuff throughout the season, rankings, lists. I think ECU fans are great on Twitter. I think they're SEC like on Twitter. I mean, I said the first time I was on, I said Eastern Carolina, and I got absolutely destroyed by ECU.
That's a pet peeve, boy. Carolina, don't do it.
So,
but you know, some ESPN announcers will do that, so don't feel too bad.
I made sure to never make that mistake again.
Love to have you back on next season. Thank you for the East Carolina, and sometimes we don't even like to be called ECU, but that's a whole other thing. Appreciate you, man, very much.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. All
right, love to have you back. Take care, buddy.
All right.
Hope you have a good night. Big Game Boomer, join us tonight. It's been a great show as always. And I'll tell you what, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. We have media days coming up. We're going to be talking about that. We'll obviously have, see if we can get reports starting on Wednesday with out at the practice field with East Carolina. Busy week. We're going to have Ryan Wallen to preview, obviously, Temple. We have Jeff Allen coming on to talk about the American on our show Thursday night. We do have a lot of quality content. We appreciate you, Kyle and Barbara, very much. Bubba Rosenbaum, we appreciate you very much, too, for all that you do for us behind the scenes, booking the show and producing and all the like. Kyle, do you have anything before we go?
Just looking forward to guys reporting tomorrow. Practice starts Wednesday and get this thing going. It's August, guys. It's football time.
All right, get your season tickets, folks. ECUPirates.com, 1-800-DIAL-ECU. Until next time, you've been watching, listen to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!